Welcome to the Morning Philip series, co-sponsored with the Bush Foundation and the New Med Group, hosted here at the Garage. The purpose of the Morning Philip series is to discuss philanthropy, civil society, and community. It is an opportunity to have a conversation with good people doing good things creatively and collaboratively. The format is a conversation, not a presentation, a dialogue, not a pitch, two chairs, a table, and a community of interested people. And today we are pleased to have with us a Vietnam veteran and a leader in our region. The New Med Group would like to extend a special thanks to the Cheeseman Center for Sound, Andrea Schaefer with Barefoot Studio for the extra chairs, Scott Sumner with Sumner Law for brewing the coffee, and Jay Schultz for helping organize today. We want to thank the members of the Garage for letting us use your office, the Bush Foundation, and for everyone here for joining us at 7 a.m. Please follow us on Facebook. Engage in our conversation at hashtag MorningPhilip. Now, with all of that, please join me in welcoming President John Yellowbird Steele. Okay.
Thank you. What did you want, Matt? I come up with you and Jay Schultz's request here.
Well, thank you for doing that. And thanks for doing that, especially because yesterday was Veterans Day.
Yes, and I was at Crazy Horse Mountain with the South Dakota National Guard honoring the Code Talkers of World War I and World War II.
So yesterday when you came up, you shared that your experience as a veteran started in Rocky Ford, and we then went to Rapid City, then by bus to Sioux Falls, which I don't think there's any more bus, then to California.
Well, my parents brought me up to my grandma's to stay overnight to catch the bus the next day for induction in Sioux Falls. On the way down to catch the bus, I was underage, but I did stop in a bar and missed the bus. They told me not to worry about it because I hadn't raised my hand yet, you know? And so next day I caught the bus to Sioux Falls, and my crew had already gone through their induction. And so they put me up at the Y in Sioux Falls over the weekend. Gave me some tickets for the cafeteria. And Monday I went through with about four locals from Sioux Falls. I was drafted. And at the end of my going through the induction thing, they talked me into joining the Army Security Agency, and I had to sign up for 4 years. And they told me it wasn't in Vietnam, so I signed that paper. But when I finished basic training at Fort Leonard Wood, looking on the bulletin board, they had given me Monterey Language Institute. They taught me to read, speak, and write the Vietnamese language. But I was running around Fort Leonard Wood saying, hey, I'm not supposed to go to Vietnam. Why am I learning this, you know? They said, well, the Army Security Agency isn't in Vietnam, but you're going. So they fooled me. So I spent 2 years in Vietnam. Answer.
Thanks. Thanks for serving, and thanks for coming up yesterday. And as you talked yesterday, and your experience in Vietnam reminded me that Native Americans have the highest percentage of participation in service.
Yes, and I've got a lot of people back home who are veterans. My son is an honorably discharged Marine, and I just had Social Security people come to Pine Ridge here, was it 2 days ago? Mm-hmm. Five women, one from Baltimore that works in Washington, D.C., one out of Denver, one from Rapid City here, and they came down, and one of the items they had was that they can fund the discharged veteran who has PTSD. They can give them money while they get treatment. And so this was all new to us. We didn't know that Social Security agency could give them monetary benefits until they can straighten up their lives or get on with their lives. But that was good news to us. And we're going to try and put that to use, because when I talk to some parents back home, they say that's not the guy that went into the service. He doesn't do anything. He just sits in the house and stares at the TV. Yeah. That's not our son.
Yeah.
But they do have problems.
President Steele makes me think of a number of things that have come out in your most recent term. The Obama administration rejected the idea of building the Keystone Pipeline after pressure from tribal leaders like yourself. The first ever memorandum of agreement with FEMA to address disaster recovery, and the Lakota Federal Credit Union continues to expand credit options and opportunities for the home ownership and locally driven economy development. This list, just like you just talked about with your service and then coming back, and now you're talking with Social Security Agency, this list reminds me that you sit in meetings in the White House, you testify in front of Congress, you host delegations, you travel the globe, you lead a sovereign nation, you're a family man. How do you keep it all in perspective?
You can't spend too much time on any one thing, so you got to assign people and delegate. Mm-hmm. And you monitor to see that it is progressing. And you got to keep things in perspective. I don't take my work home with me.
Yeah.
I've got my family back home. And to be any kind of a leader, I see that everybody has different ideas on what needs to be done and how it needs to be done. And there can be a lot of turmoil just over those issues. And if you're going to hold a personal grudge or anything against any of those people, you're not going to move forward. And so to be a leader, you've got to work with everyone, whether you agree with them or disagree with them, and to treat people with respect. Their ideas are just as good as anybody else's ideas. And we try to make them also realize this and get along, and so that things can get done. The Oglala Sioux Tribe owns and operates the largest pipeline, water pipeline in the world. It's above Fort Pierre, and I say we own and operate it. Our tribal members work on the intake in the river, on the big computerized water treatment plant. I went up there, and it's like you see on TV. They can touch the screen and bring up pump number one, pump number two. And we've got two core lines, we call them. One heading directly out of Pier West through Hayes, and another down to I-90 and then across South Dakota. And we serve all the population in between the two reservations, Lower Brule and Rosebud, and all the non-Indian population between us and the river. And I tell you that we've had some contentious meetings back in the early 1990s when the Ogallalas were going to own and operate this. But today, earlier this year, we went to Washington, and those Lyman Jones people came up to support us. Their systems are all completed and in place, but ours is not complete yet, and we had to go back to Congress and say, hey, we need to complete the Ogallala distribution system. And they came to support us.
Mm-hmm.
They believe in us now.
Mm-hmm.
We service Fort Pierre with all of their water right now. Of course, they pay us for it. But this is working together. I believe it was 1985, we attended a meeting in Kadoka, Senator Abner then, and working with the non-Indian community, we've all got potable water now. They didn't have it before, and we didn't have it, but we all have it now, and we're all going to be healthier in this part of the South Dakota. Right now we're working with Governor Dugard on Medicaid expansion only for Native Americans. And he proposed to fund this out of savings, he calls it, in going with the Medicaid expansion. But I said, well, wait a minute. We've got a treaty. And the United States government is obligated to give us treaty health care. And I tell senators and Obama, 1980 Supreme Court decision says, the most ripe and rank case in the history of the United States to illegal taking of the Black Hills. And no one will sit down and talk to us about it, or they are just silent. But I push our treaty obligations on them. And the Mr. Steve Emery, working for the governor, and I went to Pierre and said that we'll get the federal government to pay the $30 million for this Medicaid expansion because they have a treaty responsibility. And he says, yes, the state will push your treaty obligation to get them to pay for that Medicaid expansion. So that's our effort right now. And we'll tell it to the state legislature come the first part of next year. But that's going to be a win-win-win for everybody.
I think your point that it takes time and there's a lot of different ideas, and that in preparation for this conversation, I actually found a quote somebody that about you. Somebody said this: he doesn't hold personal grudges. He doesn't hold past things against you. That's something that obviously in what you just described from 85 to now to get to this point with different projects that you've been working on, that's something that you obviously have been able to do. Where does that come from?
Well, just realizing that. I suppose you want to tell me to tell that it's my Jesuit upbringing, huh? How I looked at life and leadership? I guess, yes.
We'll talk about the Pope next, right? So you...
thing I got to deal with a Pope, yes.
We'll get there. So you've been elected 7 times as president. Your first term was 23 years ago. What is your most proud accomplishment?
Well, there's a lot of them, and I did not start them. But I did work, I used to be chairman of the Ogallala-Quitta College Board of Trustees, way back in the early 80s. And so I think the college, standing on its own, accredited through North Central Accreditation Agency, probably is one of the best. But there's been a lot of progress. So the individual communities or districts across the reservation taking over education of the individual schools from the Bureau of Indian Affairs. Us taking over different functions from the Bureau of Indian Affairs as a tribe and being able to do something with them. I still have to work on the patterning of the roads. They patterned our roads so that I can't turn that dollar over down there in our community before it leaves it. We've worked on the communications, wireless and landline with Golden West. We've worked on our electricity. We got a big project in working on now of our intertribal alternative energy wind project in the near future. It's Senator Dorgan's idea. And we're working with Secretary Vilsack right now for a $15 million loan guarantee. Bush Foundation gave us some monies to start up, but we've got the Ocheti Shakowe, we call it, the company in place right now. And we're collecting monies. We're going to build our own transmission lines. WAPA's almost full, Western Area Power Association. So we're going to build our own transmission lines, and we're going to be a powerhouse in this region. Yeah. And so working together is one of our endeavors, not only South Dakota. We've worked with Nebraska better than South Dakota in the past, and they passed some legislation for us. And so we're building a nursing home just south of White Clay that's going to open here in the next few months. But it's going to be self-sustaining. We were able to, with the help of the state of Nebraska, be the only ones in the United States is called a certified public expense status out of Medicaid. And so there's no ceiling on the individual amounts of money they spend. It's all justified costs. Depreciation translates into money to pay off the cost of the facilities being built. It's paying for itself, and it's going to take care of a big problem we had that we couldn't get talking with South Dakota then done, but we got it with Nebraska. But we're working with South Dakota now, and I got a good relationship, I do believe, with Governor Dugard. When they tried to do mining on reservation on P-Patent land, but it's within our jurisdiction, and they concede to the tribes controlling jurisdiction over that mining, if we want it or not. Mm-hmm. I've got on the edge of the reservation a retail outlet that is on P-Patent land, but the state concedes to our jurisdiction to tax. And on Pine Ridge, we own all the taxes, the tribe does. We got an agreement with the state to collect them on our behalf. And according to federal court cases, we cannot tax the non-Indian doing business on reservation. I don't have any surveys or studies to say how much that is. It's just a negotiated agreement with the state. Governor then rounds that they revert 97% of the taxes back to the tribe. And for that non-Indian business portion done, they keep 3%. Oh, 96%. So they keep 4%. But we own the taxes, only tribal law. And I don't know the correct acreage. It's give or take around 3 million acres, the reservation is. And only tribal law is there, no state law. The United States Supreme Court in Hicks versus Nevada said that state police could go on the reservations to do business. But we had a deputy sheriff chase one of our tribal members onto the reservation. He stopped just across the border there, and he made some charges on the individual, and they took him to state court through Hot Springs there. It went up through the state of South Dakota Supreme Court. And because of the historic documentation, the South Dakota State Supreme Court said, contrary to Hicks versus Nevada Supreme Court case, state police cannot go onto reservations and do business in South Dakota. That's why only tribal law, tribal police, tribal courts operate on the reservation. And so we don't have any kinds of help from the state. We got some pass-through federal funds, and they operate like TANF programs and a couple of programs there. But all emergencies, whether it be police or ambulance, is the tribal responsibility. We don't have any county or any municipalities helping us out. It's our total responsibility. Our only real help is from the federal government by treaty. And so that's why we keep saying, we've got a treaty government, you are obligated for education, for health care, whatever is named in that treaty. And so our sovereignty, I believe, on Pine Ridge especially, is the best in the whole United States. Some people don't realize that. And I would say that as a people, we live different than what we consider to be outside, out there. And that's Rapid City here. And we think different. And we do things different. And there's nothing wrong with that. We want to keep our identity and our traditions. We're proud of them. Not unlike any German family, Polish family, or whosoever in their individual homes or communities. They want to keep their identity also.
And you lived with the German family when yes. you were at Marquette High School in Wisconsin.
Yes, sir. I lived with them. I've got three brothers right now. Andy Cousin amongst them, that I consider to be very close, like a brother also. One of my brothers came down to Sturgis Rally here this past year. He's 72 years old, but he's hardly down here. And he came down to the reservation to visit me and my family. So we got a, he's a pilot, and he's a motorcycle guy. And I was given by the people about 3 years ago a bonnet. And so I'm also a chief. And so we've got a motorcycle pilot guy, and we've got an Indian chief. And the other brother is a father, a Jesuit. It's like the village people. I just,
and that's where you learned German.
Learn German, yes, sir.
So you know Latin, German, Vietnamese, Lakota, and English.
And I can't speak any of them.
You and me both. We'll just.
Yes, sir. I did study all of them.
You've just talked about things changing on the reservation regarding power, water, schools, nursing home. I don't know how many people in this room know, but I understand that you have 9 children and you have 19 foster children.
Yes, sir. And, you know, I'm really proud of that because a couple of my foster kids have passed on. But the girl, she passed on. She used to come to my office and still call me Dad. Mm. And she's an adult. And she'd bring me pictures of her children, you know? But they still, these foster kids still come back and we meet them. And it's good to be know that you had an influence on their lives.
Can I ask a question? With that experience, what have you learned from your family that impacts you as a leader?
To jump up and stand at attention when your wife hollers at you. it's a good experience to have family, to know that there is unconditional love there, you know? We have also at home, not unlike any other nationality, extended families also. Mm-hmm. Cousins, uncles, aunts that are all close. So this is something that we consider to be traditional, and it makes you welcome. Mm-hmm. Now, when I came back from Vietnam,
yeah,
and I've been diagnosed with PTSD, but I got off the plane because Oakland Air Base was socked in at San Francisco International, and they had all these people out there. They were behind the fence, and we got off and got on a bus. But they were throwing eggs and throwing things at us, hollering, cussing at us, you know? Mm-hmm. Then I come back, and me and my brother go to Waterloo, Iowa, and they try to fight us mm-hmm. for being Vietnam veterans. When I go back to Pine Ridge, and they had an honoring ceremony, and they gave me an eagle feather and thanked me for being a warrior and going with the United States military. This, to me, was healing to my mind, to be welcome homed. Them saying thank you and honoring. And I figure that our people who were warriors in the past, that they also must have to deal with PTSD, things that they did, things that they saw. And this was their way of addressing PTSD. But with the, I don't know how many of you are flower people here, hippies, being very unwelcome and spit on by them and not welcomed home, added to the PTSD trauma. And so I still encourage the people back home, honor your veteran that comes back from Iraq, and Afghanistan, today, because it's healing to the mind for them to be welcomed home.
That extended family, and you shared a bit yesterday about how many families and the many, many relatives. And as a parent, I wanted to ask if you had any advice for parents today.
But I've got the German family that I grew up with in Milwaukee. I got my own personal family. My mother's 95 years old yet. And I have the Frank Jellicevich family, who we went to Vietnam at the same time. And we went over there together, and he did not come back. He came back in a box. But his mom and dad adopted me as a son to take his place. Then I got the Hasenhorst family that Dawson was a medicine man. He prayed over me, put his hands on me, pinned an eagle feather on me, and gave me an Indian name. And at that time, him and his wife, Emily, adopted me. So I've got all the Hasenhorses that claim me as a relative. But I've got a lot of families, and am loved by them, and it's very, very nice.
Thanks. Thank you. If we change topics for a moment, one of the things that we did, we sent out an email to folks that had signed up to come and hear this conversation. So we reached out to people here, and the issue of suicide on the Pine Ridge Reservation came up a number of times. We know you have taken many steps to address the issue on the reservation. You addressed the U.S. Senate Committee on Indian Affairs regarding suicide and suicide risk on the reservation. In February, you declared a state of emergency on the Pine Ridge related to this issue. Your administration has expanded skate parks and improved basketball courts and baseball fields to encourage positive activities for the youth. President Steele, yesterday you shared that you were asked to come and be present in a ceremony, and you said that you wouldn't in order to go to the skate park because you knew youth were going to be there and you wanted to be there when that skate park opened. I can only imagine that this issue weighs very heavily on you as a leader who has made youth a priority. Is there anything you would like to share with this group about the issue on your reservation?
I would like to thank everybody who has contributed. He said my administration did the skate parks and the basketball courts and stuff. No, it was outsiders coming in that had raised money and brought their expertise in skate parks, and designers who contributed free of charge designing these skate parks. I think everybody who's done that, we have so many, 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 many youth. It is hard to address it. When someone says, I want to do something for the youth and take this basketball team, that is only about 10 kids. Mm-hmm. And what about, I call it the invisible kid, the guy who gets A's and B's and respects his parents and minds them, and he never gets any attention. We need a skate park for him to go to. We need a basketball court for him to go to. But there's so many in so many communities that I am really appreciative of everybody that's addressed it. And the suicides overall, I say the proclamation I put out was to be very comprehensive. It's the housing that they live in. It's the space they don't have even to sleep in. You hear people talk about they need space to study. Heck, some of these kids need to put space to sleep. It's the conversation that they hear all the time of the adults talking about the different hardships. It's the fact that some of them don't have enough food. And mother can't get any health care because Pine Ridge Hospital does not offer those services, and they declined sending her to Rapid City to get any medical service. And so the adults talk. The kids hear this. The kids, yes, get bullied in the Facebook and whatnot, and they have different kinds of pressures on them that we did not have. But sometimes it does lead to suicides. I personally believe there's another impact, and I had three women come to me just about 2 or 3 days ago and give me this book and made me promise to read it. And it's not big, it's sort of like a large type pamphlet that they wrote. They were Christian women that have been coming to Pine Ridge since, what, 2003, 2004, they told me. And they became aware of our stories on this tall, dark suicide spirit. And that's what this book is about. That they want, they said that the children read it and they can then be stronger to overcome the influence that this tall, dark spirit does on kids when they got their minds troubled. I've had personal testimony given to me by a mother saying her son ran out into the country where there was no house. He'd never been there before. When he snapped to, he said he was listening to a gravelly voice telling him nobody liked him, that he was ugly, kill himself. The only thing snapped him out of it was this gravelly voice that told him that your mother doesn't love you. And he snapped out and said, my mother does love me. And so I do believe that there's this influence in children with troubled minds. And when I talked to these women, they understood that they believe in the demons and the angels and the saints, and that everybody is there yet influencing in some ways. And so when a kid has a troubled mind, we believe that this tall dark spirit is influencing that. And so they made this book, and it's got little illustrations that kids can color in, you know. But I believe in that. I haven't read the book yet, but I intend to. I got it out and outside. But we're trying to address suicides as a very comprehensively, from all angles. We've got the mental health. We've got Department of Health and Human Services, Department of Interior doing an MOA in Washington, D.C. so that they can work in the schools. They can put some school counselors in there, school nurses, addressing it that way. But the White House is aware of, and they've talked to me about the number of suicides and how we can stop it. I've got FEMA down there now for a May rainstorm. You might have saw it in the news where this car was almost swept away. It washed out great big chunks of major arteries, our roads. But FEMA is right now putting between 170 and 200 brand new, they're calling mobile homes, but they almost look like stick built homes. 6-inch walls, pitched roofs. And they are going to have a warmer home. They're going to be healthier because of that. There's going to be less cost for the loss of heat. But besides all of that, what is most important to me is all of those kids and their relatives are going to see that, yes, the future can change my daily life. And there's going to be some hope. And this is going to affect suicides like the proclamation I put out. And FEMA's going to be there for long term to try and help with roads, healthcare, and some more alternative housing, as I put it, to affect their a better daily life where the household's there. And this is going to impact the suicides with hope. And so I'm sort of excited about what's happening there. I got a couple of leads on some business ventures, some job creation. There's legislation in Washington right now, and I think most of us can relate to it. The CCC days after World War II, when high unemployment was in the United States. There's CCC legislation in Washington right now that I support. But I would like, and I've got it written up, to start those projects on Pine Ridge here almost immediately. I've got creeks that the water flooded in, all those dead woods all blocked up. I need trees planted. I need playgrounds. I need beautification in the communities. But this is to address the high unemployment.
And like you said, it's not one thing with suicides, but it's the roads. It's all these things that you're talking about.
Yes.
President Steele, what are three things you would like all of us to know about the Oglala Sioux tribe and the Pine Ridge?
I don't know. I think that you're all here because you're a little interested in Pine Ridge. It's hard for you to empathize with trying to figure out how do those people think, how do they live, why do they want to do that. They're different. And we call out here the outside. And our people come up and they live in the culture of Rapid City. But to realize that they do think different and live different and operate different, and there's nothing wrong with it. That they are not going to go anywhere, and you are not going to go anywhere, and that there are some projects that we have collaborated on in the past, such as the water pipeline, that benefits all of us together in what we can consider to be our bigger community. And that, yes, we were very disturbed, and it wasn't so much the beer spilling incident and the words the children put up with that, but it was the justice system that we were more disturbed at up here in the courts, and saying it was all right, nothing wrong. And so, working together, instead of, now we had to get the attention, right? Rapid City's attention. So we complained about the journal putting it on the front page, trying to blame the kids for not standing up during the national anthem, which was a lie. I got him sitting right here. we got to get the attention. And then we talk. I've worked like this with Gordon, Nebraska. When the police shot a Vietnam veteran over there in 1992, my first official act as president was to march on Gordon with a staff with feathers on it and a drum group and a whole bunch of people and walk down their main street. And you should have heard all the comments coming from outside. But those city leaders sat down with us, and there was subsequent meetings with those city leaders. Gordon changed. Now I got a council person from Martin saying, "Geez, I wish Martin was like Gordon. You know, Gordon's really good." Well, they never used to be before we sat down with them, you know? And we all come to an understanding. But it does take that before you sit down and start talking about what really matters and to get things resolved. So I'm optimistic that this evening I'm going to be meeting with the mayor, the president of the Chamber of Commerce, and the director of the Civic Center. A couple evenings ago, I was up Mother Butler's. Mr. Vargas didn't even see me there. But I sat in on, listened to the study that you did, and I thought that was pretty good. The statistician came up with that, showing that there wasn't really any picking on people, no discrimination. Yes, there was some of the statistics that were a lopsided, but there was a reason for it. And he even looked to the reason for it. More Indians going into court than the ratio by population. And that was because failure to appear. And why are more of the traffic stops, them getting more citations? It's because they did not have insurance or a driver's license, and this was because of them not possibly having the money to purchase it. And this is what the statistician came up with, right? And it was all understandable, like common sense. But it's things like that that need to be known and understood, and we can resolve possibly Rapid City's problem with their Indian population, and to understand that not everybody is going to be an angel. We've got some people that just are troublemakers on both sides of the fence. And there's no getting around it.
President Steele, do you govern differently today than you did in 1992?
Yes. And you will also have a different perspective on life when you get older. Change the way you do things. It's called, I think, a little bit of wisdom from experiencing life. And I've experienced different lives, I would say. Like I said, when I was little and grew up, all I had was a horse in the Badlands and the White River running by. And so I rode quite a bit. Just then I got a little bit of education, then I went to Vietnam. And that's a totally different life, guys. When you go there, you're fully immersed in everything there, from the smells, from what you hear, what you see. We used to refer to this place as the world, the United States. In the world, this is the way it is. When I get back to the world, but it's totally different. And then I come back and I work for Western Electric, based out of Sioux Falls there for several years, then went back to the reservation and got into politics. But I've had different experiences. And that's where your wisdom comes from, sir.
You just mentioned politics, so we hear a lot about leaders reading about other leaders. President Obama has talked about Lincoln and seems to look to Lincoln and others as examples to learn from. What leaders have you looked to? Who have been your mentors?
Well, when I was growing up, it was John Kennedy. He's the one said, don't ask what your country can do for you, what can you do for your country? Give a few years of your life in the service to your country. That's why I signed that paper for 4 years in the military. Because of what John Kennedy said, give a few years of your life to your country. Then I come back and I see, D.E. Halliburton's making billions of dollars off the Iraqi war, and we all did it for measly servicemen's pay, you know? And I come to understand that freedoms are not to be taken lightly. It's a should treasure it, and I see some people abusing it. When I came back from Vietnam, I went to Milwaukee first. And I bought a car there, and I drove back to South Dakota here. And let me tell you, I physically experienced the freedom of travel. It was a feeling. And so, I just tell you that don't take freedoms too lightly. They're to be treasured, because over there in Southeast Asia, in all of those countries, and I've been to quite a number of those countries there, the freedom just isn't like here. Maybe it's not perfect, but we can work on that.
You mentioned traveling to a number of different places. You've done that as president of the Oglala Sioux Tribe. Is there a place that's your favorite?
It's sure not Washington. I would say that I like getting home.
Yeah.
I like going back to the reservation.
So where is your favorite place on the reservation? Anybody that spent time on the reservation or visits there regularly has a favorite. Where's your favorite?
Well, you got to consider
Rocky Four.
What you consider to be favorite. Is it the scenery, the topography, or is it your family you want to get back to? I would say it's with my family.
What legacy do you want to have for your children, your grandchildren, and What's the legacy?
Give them a future.
What did President Obama tell you last Thursday when you saw him?
You're just a jolly old guy. I did most of the talking. But I'd met him previous. And I met him before he was elected here in Rapid City. Me and him had a one-on-one. And I disagree with a lot of the things he's doing now. But on the XL pipeline, I wrote him quite a number of letters, and the State Department when Hillary was in there. And I don't know if the people in South Dakota would realize it, but we've got two what we call core water lines that it had to pass. And that line is heated to 400 degrees to make it flow. It's tar sands with a medium that is a byproduct of natural gas, and it is very, very toxic. And you know that the 400 degrees affects the soil. And if it affected the soil to affect our water pipeline, and some of those toxics get into that system, we would probably never be able to get them out. That water pipeline means so much to us for the future health, because we have high radiation, arsenic, nitrates in our underground water. We're going to have a healthier future generation. That's why we needed to stop that XL pipeline for our future generations and that good potable water. Besides our cultural and sacred sites.
What do you think is the most misunderstood about the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation? What's the most misunderstood?
I would say that the National Park Service is the ones that tells all the visitors coming from here, it's dangerous down there. Don't you go down there. Those Indians are no good. They're heathens and savages. You know, you stay away from Pine Ridge. But those tourists continue to come down, and they would not tell them where Wounded Knee was. And they wanted to visit Wounded Knee, and they'd call. How do I get to Wounded Knee? National Park Service won't let us know. I tried to put a one-page road system map at Interior, and the then park superintendent would not let me leave copies showing the road systems on Pine Ridge so that they could get to Wounded Knee.
Mischaracterization.
I don't know, but it's a lot of people saying, don't go down there. Mm-hmm. You're going to get hurt. Mm-hmm. It's dangerous. Mm-hmm. Because they understand that we live different, we think different, we do things different. And when they don't understand, they're fearful of it, I think, and they tell other people this.
So I'm going to ask you a very unfair question. How can the people in this room today help you change that misperception?
Nothing. Just be yourself, but understand. And if you're ever in an audience, just tell them that, hey, it's safe down there. And there's nothing wrong with those people. They may be different, but we're all people.
What are you most proud of?
I don't know. My family. But I did make mention of the Pope.
You're bringing him up. I didn't bring him up.
It's affecting us, I think, today. But back in 1493, Pope put out this papal bull. And in there is the doctrine of discovery. And this doctrine of discovery says Aboriginal peoples, if they are not Christians, are to be considered heathens and savages. Heathens and savages have no souls. They can't own any property, they can only occupy it. The United States government incorporated that into their justice system. And so, you see in the movies, What this guy can say, I got two notches on my gun. I killed two people. That's not counting the 15 or 20 Indians I killed, you know? They didn't have to answer to the courts on it. Any store clerk, banker, cowboy, rancher could kill, rape, maim any man, woman, or child of Native descent. Not have to answer to anybody for it. And this happened until, I would say less than 100 years ago. In 1924, the United States Congress passed the Indian Citizenship Act, making us citizens of these United States. And then they had to start going to court if they did an injustice to anybody of Native descent. And that still permeates some of our elders' minds that Indians are still considered heathens or savages. And we call it crimes against mankind, basically. And it's happened up until our recent past. And I think that still is some sort of talk and thinking, and the young people hear it too. And it gets into their actions, their misunderstandings. I was very involved as chairman of Wounded Knee District, a little geographic political sub-district on Pine Ridge. I was a chairman of that district for 12 years, and I was in on all of the meetings whereby the federal government changed their word of the Battle of Wounded Knee to the Massacre of Wounded Knee. The military would not agree. Everybody in the United States government would agree, but the military wouldn't, because they'd given up 38 medals of honor there for that battle. Until we produced a document from December 30th, the day after the massacre, 1889, by a Dr. McGillicuddy, his written report, and saying that he was there and reviewed and observed the carnage that happened at Wounded Knee. And he said that those military were not killed by Indians. The Indians did not have the weapons to make the wounds in those soldiers. With the Ogallala's oral story on Wounded Knee, that Dr. McGillicuddy report fit it right in, because it was the 7th Cavalry. It was revenge for Little Bighorn. They were encountered above the hill at Porcupine and went on over and encamped in Wounded Knee on a level area down below with surrounding hills where they put the Hotchkiss guns. The cavalry, if you look it up, were very young. They were raw recruits. They went to Pine Ridge and brought back kegs and kegs and kegs of whiskey. Those troopers were gotten drunk all night long and drunk the next day when that massacre, when they incited it. And they even killed each other. I was sitting in my office as president when they came and got me. And when it was a young family coming from Ohio, I believe it was, that came to ask for forgiveness for their grandpa. He was a soldier at Wounded Knee. And it bothered him all his life. And they came to ask forgiveness for him. He had since been deceased, but we forgave him, understanding that he was probably very, very inebriated, acting on his sergeant's commands, to murder. Nothing happened there. But we did get a change from a battle to a massacre. And I'm hoping the Pope might listen to me and say something over his papal bull, which I can then bring to the United States government and explain to them that their crimes against mankind throughout these United States needs to be recognized. That's just me, though, I hate guys.
President Steele, you have said today, you've talked about hope. Yesterday, you talked about a strong relationship with the governor, with the different offices in the state government. You've listed a number of projects today, and the list was longer even yesterday when we were talking, about positive things happening and all this progress that is being made. I asked you yesterday if you've seen anything like it before in your other terms as president, and you said no. You talked about the change in the change that is happening because of the intermingling that happens, especially with the youth. You talked a great deal about hope. And is there anything that you want to say at the end here about hope?
Yeah, I'm hoping that Rapid City and Pine Ridge can in the future start to get along a little better, so as to not have, and I don't think it was intentional, the spilling of beer on these children. But do you know that in the future that's going to impact those children that happened to? They're going to remember that. I think it was a situation where he probably did it, but I understand that his parents own a steakhouse in Faith. And his parents get along with Indians for decades and decades and decades. And they're friends over there. He got out of hand. But there's not only him. It's impacted so many people that it does need to be addressed somehow. And you can't let this continue. We are in court right now with the state social services and the state judge over child welfare and custody cases. We won in summary judgment 7 points on how they operate like a cattle processing yard. 2 minutes and rush through and no hearing. Not hearing anybody's sides of the story on what was what, but just sort of, this is the way we do it. Yes, and they give them to foster families, and we get reports back that the state did this for favors to these foster families, because they get quite a bit of money for each child that they keep on a daily basis. And to do it for that purpose is just not right. And to do it to save time because the judge wanted to get home is just not right. They deserve a fair hearing, and justice needs to happen.
There's certainly a lot to continue to do. And I want to say thank you, President Steele. Before we close, I want to... last month we shared that we would be announcing something new at the garage. We are excited to announce our first chalk artist in residence, a high school senior, Joe Gibson. He's here floating around. He is the artist behind the chalk work when you first walk in. And we look forward to more of his work and his creative ideas showing up. President Steele, thank you for this conversation. Thanks for taking time. We have a painting from the Susie Capa Art Center of
the Black Hills that we'd like to give to you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you for your time. Thank you for what you do. And we look forward to future conversations.
Thank you, Matt.
Black Hills, we mean the sacred. It's a place of our origin stories. In the past, they went and hunted food up there, went up there to gather herbs for medicine, and they would not even go bathroom in the Black Hills. It was so sacred. People don't associate the sacredness of that place to us as a people. They can't realize it or conceptualize it in their minds. But thank you for the picture. It means a lot to me for that.